Well, good evening and welcome back to the Journey Home program. I'm your host, John Mark Grodi. And once again, we have this great opportunity here on EWTN to come together to hear a testimony, a story of the good work that the Lord has done in our lives, all the ways, the people, the places, the events that He used to bring us close to Him and then to send us out on mission. And we're joined tonight by Alan Webb. He's a former mainline Protestant. He is currently the head track and field and cross-country coach at Ave Maria University in Florida. And also, he held the record, the American record for the mile for 16 years. It was only recently broken, but held that record for 16 years. And so we're going to hear some of that in the story tonight. Alan, great to have you here to share your story.
Thank you for having me on the show. Yeah. Glad to be here.
Yeah.
Glad to be here.
Appreciate your sharing the story, but also your work there at the university, training up people. And again, I'm excited to hear the rest. I mean, we have the spiritual journey, how you became Catholic, but also a lot of other neat stuff in your story as well about running. And I'm sure we'll talk a bit at the end about kind of the body and mind and spirit, you know, how we are embodied humans and training up in that way. So great to have you here.
Yeah. Thanks again for having me. Thank you. Thank you so much. And just glad to be able to just tell my story to help maybe draw somebody else into the church or deeper into the church. You know,
right.
I think that I'm as a convert from the mainline Protestant, but you know, I feel like now that I'm within the church, you know, there's sort of a daily calling to reconvert consistently. Yeah. So
that's good. That reminder that we all need. So wonderful. Well, go back to the beginning. Where does it all begin for you?
Well, it began in the Episcopal Church. I was baptized in the Episcopal Church as an infant, and you know, my family spent the beginning of my childhood in the Episcopal Church. But then, eventually, in late elementary school, we changed to start attending a multi-denominational church.
Had your family been Episcopal for a while in terms of generations?
My mom grew up in the Episcopal Church, okay. And my dad grew up in the Methodist Church. And so the church that I went through their version of a confirmation was this multi-denominational church that included Methodist. So the name of the church was the United Christian Parish, and we were members simultaneously with the Methodist Church, the Presbyterian Church, the United Church of Christ, and the Disciples of Christ. I guess I was first of all grateful, you know, and still am very grateful that the seeds were planted there,
right.
You know, and I was baptized, and I have a strong appreciation for my parents for having that being part of my life, and having that there. And I would say that we went to church, I'd probably say a lot of weeks, you know, wasn't, you know, super disciplined, as, a Catholic should be, but you know, it was there. And
right.
So I appreciate that.
Yeah.
We did celebrate Christmas and Easter. So those things were there. But you know, as you can hear me describe it, it was sort of inconsistent in the liturgy, you know,
sure.
and being specifically Catholic. Mm-hmm. So, I sort of fast forwarded all the way to my elementary days and you know, confirmation, which was, you know, the middle school time. And so it was there,
right?
You know, that seed was there, but I would definitely say that it was not the center.
Mm-hmm.
It was definitely not the center of our lives, of our discussions.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we rarely talked about it at any time outside of when we would go to those services.
Sure.
And you know, it kind of matched my own sort of feelings about it. You know, like if I ever talked about it with my friends, it would sort of just be kind of a passing thing, or you know, inconsistent with any ability to really describe what I believed in. You know, like, well,
sure.
What do you believe in? They're like, oh, well, we celebrate Christmas, and yeah, I guess I believe in God. But I didn't really have any true, deep convictions there.
Was that sense of again, not really having firm roots in a particular belief, was that affected or increased by the what does a multi-denominational parish look like? You know, the fact that they were all, did they worship together? Were there different services? Or what did that look like?
Well, they did have one service on that particular day.
Okay.
But for example, like, you know, when we'd approach their version of communion, you know, like one week it would be, you know, the Presbyterian version of it. And then the other week would be a Methodist version of it. And then another week might be Disciples of Christ version of it. And okay. I never really knew, you know, the pattern of that, but you know, occasionally would change. Mm-hmm. The consistency was that it was one building. We had, you know, it was like 11 o'clock. Right. Everybody was that was it. That was it.
Sure.
And you know, from a moral construct perspective, you know, I think that, everybody agreed on sort of the general concept, the general ideas that come from Christianity. You know, mm-hmm. the moral aspect. You know, that part was there.
A love of Jesus, love of Scripture. I'm sure.
Correct. Those types of things were there.
Yeah.
But sort of the finer points, as you sort of dug deeper, were not. Mm-hmm. And, you know, at that time, I was sort of too young to really understand, like, how that might affect somebody.
Right.
You know, only later, you know, in sort of adulthood when I'm, you know, sort of maybe because of my own personal struggles and, you know, sort of the searching for the truth, I realized, oh, well, maybe that was why I was acting the way I was, because I didn't have these convictions or I wasn't motivated to live live morally, because I didn't have that. I didn't have that rock to hold on to push against.
Right.
All along the way, you know, my own personal career, athletic career, I would say, was developing, and I was. I got really good at running. to make this story,
did you start in high school, or when did that sort of kick off, that love of running?
Well, it started before that, really.
Okay.
Actually, the love of running kind of began before running, I would say, from formal running training. I was a swimmer, and I played soccer, and I played basketball up until high school. And I sort of did what I'd call hidden training, is what I tell all the high school athletes that I did before I got to high school. You know, I did a lot, I'd say pretty high level, intense swimming training.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I played soccer. And so I was fast enough, I would say. I wasn't the fastest kid, but I was fast enough to not get run off the field in the soccer games.
Mm-hmm.
So it kind of made sense that I was a middle distance runner, a miler, because I wasn't fast enough to run with the sprinters, uh-huh. But I could hang out with them a little bit, and I wasn't really the true sense of the word distance guy,
mm-hmm.
But right smack in the middle was where I did the best, but I had a lot of success once I started competing more formally in high school,
right.
And I just felt it gave me confidence, and just, you know, I was, you know, the sort of the world, so to speak, was sort of rewarding me for some of the work that I did, and I just kept progressing, getting better and better. I had amazing coaches that helped me along the way, that guided me to do the right training. And before I knew it, by the end of my high school career, you know, I set the high school national record in the mile. And that at that point, it sort of made me, made me famous in the track and field, at least in the track and field.
Right, right.
You know, yeah. You know, somebody on this show might be learning about me but in that small sort of the bubble, I would say.
Sure,
People know who I was, but, for everybody else, I was just another 5'9" average height and weight guy that walks around. It took me a lot of places, you know. Mm-hmm. I got to be able to travel the world to compete. I competed in the Olympic Games in 2004. You know, that was a lifetime goal of mine to qualify for the Olympic team. And so I would say I felt like I accomplished a lot. You know, I was I wanted more, you know. And that's sort of, I guess, the danger of really any secular vocation is to never be satisfied. Mm. You know, you always want more money. You always want more victories. Always want more records. Mm-hmm. And you know, that was definitely me. You know, there was times when I wasn't as grateful as I should have been. And I guess the athletic part, you know, leads into and I'd say parallels the spiritual part. Mm-hmm. because it wasn't what I just said, is that yeah. it left me empty. Mm. You know, it left me like I was never satisfied.
Right.
And I can guarantee that every athlete out there that's listening to this knows exactly what I'm talking about.
right.
You always want another Super Bowl, another World Series, or another gold medal, or another record. You know, it's sort of it's part of our original sin to kind of to always want that.
And even when we have, you know, a veneer of the faith, when we have, you know, sort of a surface level faith, we may not have enough for us to really contextualize those other parts of our life, you know, and so they can easily become an idol, right? Mm-hmm. I don't really have Christ as the Lord of my life. I don't really see how, like, the meaning and purpose, the call of my life. And so it's hard not to get to drift into these other things that seem to give meaning and purpose, you know, and drive for what I do.
You're right. You're right. And track and field, and really any Olympic sport for that matter, is a really, really easy one to pick on. Hmm. Because scripture talks about these idols of gold, silver, and bronze, right. And those are the ones that they give out. And so right. It's so, you know, I can pick on myself because that was me, like, making these idols. Mm-hmm. And sort of worshiping that as your God,
right.
You know, and that really is my biggest regret of looking back on my own career, is that was the idol of my life. That was the center. Mm-hmm. Even though I did go to these Protestant services and that it was there, but that Christ was in the peripherals. Mm-hmm. For sure.
Okay.
He was not the center.
Okay.
The sport was the idol. Mm. That was it. That was the mistake, you know. Training theory and whether or not you did the right workouts, you know, and the nutrition, could that have been better? Mm-hmm. Could I have done things differently in that way? Those arguments are sort of a different category. And yeah, we could have made some tweaks there too, in terms of being successful on the track. But the big regret was that Christ was not the center of my mm-hmm. life. He was not the center of my life. Mm-hmm. So, and even after, you know, my running career, I chased after trying to be a triathlete. And then, you know, when that was done, you know, I hadn't finished my degree and I was like, oh, well, I got to get a job. So I should do that, you know? And then you start thinking, well, is the career or getting some fancy education, what's going to make me happy.
Right.
I kind of realized that the answer was no. The answer was no. Like, what really matters? What really, really matters? And the spiritual part started to become clearer that was the answer.
And when was this? I mean, locate us in the timeline here. So this takes you through college and after college.
Yeah, I fast forwarded way ahead.
All right.
I went to the University of Michigan my freshman year.
Okay.
I left Michigan because I was frustrated with some injuries. And then during my fastest years, I would say, which included 2004, the Olympic year, and then when I set the American record. Mm-hmm. In 2007, I was representing Nike on a professional contract. And so that put me in my mid 20s. Okay. And that would be a great point to bring in a huge part of my conversion, which was when I met my wife.
Okay.
Which was in 2007, which just happened to be the year that I ran my fastest. So definitely got to give credit there. <Yeah. laughs> to my wife, I definitely know that, I guess chasing after her maybe helped me chase after her some of the faster times. But then I she was part of my life, and then maybe that's why I got slower, because I had accomplished what I needed to accomplish.
How'd you guys meet?
We actually met through a friend.
Okay.
Through a friend. Her name is Kira D'Amato now. She was Kira Karlstrom at the time. She introduced us. Extremely successful runner herself. She actually just competed at the Olympic Trials Marathon this past in Florida. Wow. And has done amazing the last few years. She is also the American record holder in the half marathon. So Kira introduced Julia and I, and that's where the Catholic Church became front and center for myself. She just exposed that to me, and really sort of challenged me to be like, well, what is the difference? Like why not be a Methodist? Why not be a Presbyterian? Why be a Catholic? What's the difference?
Was this kind of your first exposure to the Catholic Church, or did you have was it a known quantity in your mind up to this point?
It was known, but I would say it was really the first time that it was consistently there.
Okay.
Consistently there with any real, I don't know if research is the right word, but any real looking into. It really started with the Mass. Mm-hmm. I think that the Mass was the biggest thing. Mm-hmm. And I know Julia will fully admit that she's not perfect. neither of us are. She would admit that. She would admit that she has had her own sort of falling away and coming back to the church in certain ways. But that's a longer story. Maybe right. Have her on a different one for a different show. But she held on to the Sunday obligation. Mm-hmm. She wouldn't budge. She wouldn't budge on that because she knew, she was catechized to know that was non-negotiable, right? It was a non-negotiable thing. Mm-hmm. And she was even willing to say, hey, well, I don't mind going, I don't mind at least attending a Protestant service, but I have to go on Sunday. I can't. That's not negotiable for her. And then that's when some of the theological discussions kind of came up with us. And
sure.
Her family. She was a cradle Catholic herself, and so some of those discussions started to come up. And mm-hmm. I think that was one of the things that I really admired about Julia. Mm-hmm. was that she stuck to that.
Yeah.
And as I learned slowly over time, with bits and pieces about the church, I now know why that's so important. Yeah. I mean, it's one of the Ten Commandments,
Right.
is observing the Sabbath. And I can say now that attending the Mass, mm-hmm. is such an incredible grace, mm-hmm. that I would want to invite all my Protestant brothers, Protestant brothers and sisters to come and experience, because that's truly where heaven comes to earth, and it's and I crave that so much. And that's also one of the wonderful blessings that I have being a coach at Ave Maria is that being at Ave makes it so easy, because right. there's it's Mass is there's seven masses a day that I can find my way to. So and so it makes that part really easy, and that's like a sort of a bonus benefit to being working where I am.
Real clear theology, clear doctrine about what we believe. It's a very practical thing. Like once, it's easy for you to be very vague in a young person's mind, but once you have a clear doctrine, like we believe this is our Lord's gift to us, His present in the Holy Eucharist. This is our Lord Jesus Christ. Once you have that very clear, okay, it's either got to be, maybe it's true, or it's really weird and messed up and we should run far away from
it.
Right? You can't be in the middle ground with something like that once you get to a clear statement of doctrine. And so to finally encounter that, you know, through meeting Julia, right, that causes you to ask some real big questions. Once mm-hmm. you encounter a real hard, something hard and concrete, it's like, okay, I have to ask some questions now. I have to understand what I believe, what I don't believe.
Yeah. Exactly. And it challenged me to do that.
Yeah.
It challenged me to do that. Before I kind of go back to the specifics mm-hmm. of kind of how I kind of
sure.
got to that point a little better, I'll just say that to kind of make that athletic parallel there,
yeah.
And just to, you know, encourage the athletes and non-athletes alike. I brought up earlier the sort of the idol of the victory, or the idol of the medal mm-hmm. or the record. So many times I can go to Mass and say, I can get something that's better than that every single day, and it's free, mm. right? Something that's more valuable than all the material world, including any medal or victory that you can get. You get that at the Mass. Mm. It's there. You know, it's Christ's presence mm. in the Eucharist, right? It's He's there. And you can have that. It's available. It's available, yeah. And it's there for everybody. If you prepare for that, and you go there in a worthy way. And so, just from a motivation standpoint, just like sort of inspire, you know.
Yeah.
Hopefully, I'm trying to coach.
Yeah.
Coach myself. You know, I try to do that. But then, you know, kind of share that with everybody else.
Right.
But I guess you know we're on the show is called The Journey Home. So mm-hmm. How did that journey progress?
Mm-hmm.
I learned a little more, just more and more about the church. Mm-hmm. I came into the church in 2017. Mm-hmm. So I had known Julia for 10 years. It took me 10 years. So it wasn't right away. It wasn't some like super fast mm-hmm. conversion. It was slow.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that story is important, because I feel like a lot of people, you hear sort of more fantastic stories of conversion where it was like this moment where they walked out the door and something was, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
It wasn't that way. It was not that way. And I feel like a lot of people will find themselves in that more natural, slower process.
Right.
I'm
sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt here. But this is actually, let's finish the thought, but this would actually be a good place to take a break. Because we can come back and then you can walk us through that longer process.
Sure.
But as you were saying, like that journeys come in all shapes and sizes. Some people do have this St. Paul moment, they get knocked down and their life changes. But for many people, it's more, you know, God works on us slowly over time, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
All right. Okay. Well, let's take a little break and we'll be back and you can walk us through all that. So again, we'll be back in just a couple minutes to hear the rest of Alan's story. I want to remind you that if you go to chnetwork.org/story, we have a whole archive of Journey Home episodes, written stories, short videos, all manner of testimonies from people of every different background who, through God's grace and mercy, have found their way home to the Catholic Church. And so if you search there, you'll find someone who probably looks and sounds a little bit like you, and it would be helpful to hear their testimony, hear what God did in their life. So check that out at chnetwork.org. Again, we'll be back in just a couple minutes to hear the rest of Alan's story. See you then. Well, Well, welcome back to the Journey Home program. We're entering the second half of our hour tonight, speaking with Alan Webb. He's a former mainline Protestant. He's the head of track and field and cross country at Ave Maria University in Florida, the coach there. He also was the record holder in America for the miler, for the 1 mile run there for about 16 years, that you said.
Yes.
Pretty amazing stuff. And so when we left off, I had to interrupt you there because you were going to tell the rest of the story after, as so often happens, you met a Catholic girl, and in the midst of your running career, you talked a little bit about, you know, wrestling with kind of the idol that can, something like that can become, especially when you don't really have your roots planted firmly in Christ. You don't really know where that is. But meeting your future wife, Julia, shook you up a little bit, got you thinking. And so, pick us up from there. What happened next?
Yeah. Well, after Julia and I met, I talked about how it exposed me to the Catholic Church. And just over time, I learned little bits and pieces of, mm-hmm. About it. And, I think one of the things that helped me was a particular Lighthouse Catholic Media, one of those CDs that you see at almost every single parish around the country. They put out it was called Why the Church Still Matters, and it was a compilation of talks that they, sort of like an all-star collection of talks, and I really think that there was three of those that really stood out to me that were a really great progression to kind of sort of walk myself through or help me walk through why. And one was from Father Mike Schmitz, another was from Bishop Barron, another one was from Scott Hahn, three pretty well-known Catholic speakers, and it starts at the beginning, before you even talk about Christ and the Catholic Church and any specifics to get in there, and is what is truth, what is objective truth, and does that exist? And Father Mike talks about that. I think he has like a new version of it. You can YouTube it, you know, and I'm sure that will pop up. Father Mike Schmitz, objective truth.
Right.
You know, what is it? Like, does it exist? Mm-hmm. Does objective truth exist? And so, you know, the answer to that question is yes, it does. Truth exists. Truth exists. So that was sort of step one right there.
Yeah.
Okay. Truth exists. Okay. Well, then let's go to the next thing.
Which sounds so simple, and yet it is amazing that so many people walk around with those categories blurred in their minds. I mean, you talked a little bit earlier about it, having sort of this vague sense of what you believed, but not something that would actually motivate you to live a particular way or to do this versus that. Right? When we don't really have a sense of truth being something solid, well, it doesn't mean anything practically for our lives, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you won't be able to successfully move along this, you know, this journey that I'm describing. If you can't make that step, anything I say afterwards, you can go ahead and ignore everything because you won't even be able to accept it.
Right.
Right. Mm-hmm. So I accepted that.
Yeah.
Truth exists. Truth exists. Objective truth exists. And so the next step is, well, I grew up in this Protestant Christian household, and so there's this person of Jesus that's been talked about. Well, who is this guy? Who is this person that is Jesus Christ? Is he just another guy that the Romans tortured? Who is this person? And Bishop Barron talks about that. Like, who is Christ? And you have to make the decision, is this guy who he says he is? Is he the Son of God? Or is he just another lunatic that the Romans tortured? Right?
Right.
Who is it?
Yeah.
You know? And I'm like, okay, yeah, Jesus Christ is who he says he is. Mm-hmm. He is the Son of God. I believe what he says, and he says all these things, and all of the overwhelmingly supportive evidence that you can find that would take more than an hour to talk about, support that. Everything he says supports that, all the documents that you can, you know, you know, fill up the whole world of with books that that describe that, are, you know, support all of that, right? So there's step two, and so but then why the Catholic version of it? Why that? And Scott Hahn does a great job and has other more complete books about it, but he took about 10 minutes to talk about the Eucharist and specifically like why coming to the Mass for the Eucharist is not only important, but there is, you know, there's overwhelming evidence for that as well. And so then, you know, I sort of hear that and, my fiance, eventually my wife, and, you know, they might be saying it, and, you know, this CD that I'm being forced, not forced to listen to, but that I'm listening to on some road trip, we're driving somewhere in Wisconsin, you know, I'm hearing this and I'm sort of like, yeah, sure. Okay. But then I hear it again and I'm like, you know, when you sort of taste pure water, you're like, well, that water tastes better than this sort of tainted water or something that's not right, just a little off. And you're like, well, maybe I think this water actually tastes better than the other one. You know, and you taste it again and you're like, oh, well, this water tastes pretty good. Maybe I should only be drinking this water. I should only be drinking the pure water and not the water that has a little bit of tint to it that might not have everything I need in it, right? And so that's kind of what started happening. And I started to not be able to ignore the truth any longer.
Sure.
But there was still some sort of purging I think I had to go to. You sort of applaud me for my athletic success, but there was a lot of, I fell down the mountain of running, and I did what I perceived to be poorly, and, you know, eventually I lost my pro contract, and so all of the idols were sort of abandoning me. You know, the idols of the world were, you know, I had to sort of be stripped of that before I could really have the motivation to bring Christ into the center. Mm-hmm. But eventually, you know, I had nothing else to fill it up. And, you know, when, you know, we began talking, I said, what did I fill it up with? Well, I knew that the spiritual aspect, that mm-hmm. was what I needed to fill it up with. And after hearing all of that, sort of hearing the truth, mm-hmm. I finally did what I said that I wanted to do, was that I didn't want, or I tried to accomplish what I knew might happen, was I didn't want to convert just because I married a Catholic girl. I wanted to be genuine. Mm-hmm. I wanted to be sort of a real thing. Mm-hmm. And at that, and I was sort of emptied enough to be able to be filled up with the right things. And I told Julie, I was like, okay, I'm ready to join the RCIA. Let's do this. But sort of the sort of cool kind of conversion story part of it was that there was this retreat that they were putting on, and they had been talking about it at Mass at St. Pius X in Portland, which was the parish that Julie and I were attending, even though I wasn't confirmed in the church. They had been talking about this retreat, and you were supposed to sign up like months ahead, and it was like the day before we were supposed to go. They were supposed to go on this retreat, and I told Julia that maybe I should see if they'd still let me go. And she, of course, Julia's all pumped up. She's like, I think you gotta go to this retreat. she called the woman that put us on, like, hey, is it still okay if Alan goes to this retreat? And they said, oh, of course you can go to this retreat. It was an Axe retreat. They have Axe retreats around the country. It's not.
Yeah.
So I showed up the next, you know, it was like the next day that we were supposed to go on this retreat. and you're supposed to bring all this camping gear and stuff. And I didn't read any of this stuff. I just sort of showed up and said, "Hey, I'm here. You know, what do I do?" And of course, it just happened that a seminarian who was a deacon becoming a priest just happened to be there, and no other year had anybody brought an extra sleeping bag except for this time. Mm-hmm. He just happened to bring an extra one just because he said, "I don't know if somebody's going to need it, but I didn't bring one." If he didn't bring that sleeping bag, I would have been sleeping on a cot with nothing. So that was sort of one sign to me that, hey, you know, keep going, Alan. You're doing great. And I met my confirmation sponsor there. His name is John Curran. And actually, it was really awesome because when I came into the studio today, they have all these Catholic books, and one of them was Born Fundamentalist, Born Again Catholic, which was a book that John lent to me read during my RCIA.
It's a great book.
It's a fantastic book. I think even Catholics should read it just to kind of sort of review why you're doing the things that you're doing. And then anybody who's interested in learning about the Catholic Church, I think David Curry does a fantastic job of just step by step, in a similar way that those three other men did. Yeah. David goes through the big topic issues that most Protestant Christians have with the Catholic Church, and it just explains them in a very simple way because. Mm-hmm. What I realize is that there's really nothing to hide. There's nothing to hide or fear, and then it just becomes motivating, you know. And so I went through the RCA, and the whole time I was just like, I couldn't wait to get to it, to the end, because you know, at that point, you know, I'd been exposed to the Catholic Church consistently for 10 years, and so now it was like my eyes were opened suddenly, and I saw the Eucharist for what it was, and I was like this kid, and I couldn't wait to get couldn't wait to get to the end. It was like that was the Olympics for me. That was like setting the world record. It's getting that part. I couldn't wait to get there. There's more specifics that I don't need to go into great detail on, but you know, really ever since then, I've tried my best to kind of take all of that work ethic part that I learned as a runner and just dedicate that to the Lord and just take that part of it and put it there. And through other twists and turns, it's led me to the point where now, you know, you're introducing me as the head track and field cross country coach.
Yeah, talk about how'd that come about? Yeah.
Oh man, that was crazy.
Yeah.
you know, and I began coaching. Made the decision that was, you know, the career path that I wanted to take. And but I, you know, my first two jobs that I had were at you know, secular universities. And I got to the point where I felt like I was kind of building a pyramid to nowhere, I felt like. And I really wanted to coach in the Catholic environment. Or if I couldn't, I wouldn't do something else. And so I left my job at Arkansas Little Rock. And I coached at a high school. And I took a couple grad classes from Franciscan University. They have some online things that you can do. I was taking courses in catechetics because I thought maybe that would be what I should be doing instead of coaching.
Yeah.
But then, and we heard about this incredible place called Ave Maria and how, you know, they built this town really literally centered around the church, you know, and, you know, you can look on a map and it's like the whole thing kind of broadcasts out from the parish. Yeah. And how they have this university that's doing the same thing, really in a genuine way, trying to adhere to the teachings of the church and not just be a nominally Catholic university, which, you know, I would say is unfortunately happened. Julie and I said, let's try to find our way there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I went on the website, the athletic website, and the coach there had just become the head track and field coach. Mm-hmm. They were just starting this program, and I said to myself, oh man, he's not going anywhere. You know, people that get a job like that, even if they leave, it won't be for a little while. But I still tried my best. I sent an email to Father Vidal, the priest, and said, hey, you know, if you're looking for anybody that might be a religious education, you know, I'm here for you. Here's my resume. Yeah. You know, was very short when it came to the Catholic aspect of it. But, you know, I tried to offer up my, you know, my successes in track to that. And it turned out that like 3 months later, the former coach decided to leave. And I had reached out to him, Brian Glassie, and said, hey, if I find my way to Ave, you know, I'll volunteer for you. But he said he was leaving and he wanted to recommend me for the job. When our athletic director, Joe Patterson, knew that Brian was going to leave, his wife mentioned it to Father Vidal, and she told him that he had gotten an email from me. Mm-hmm. And how that would make sense, you know, somebody with track and field coaching experience.
Right.
And before I know it, I was on a plane with my oldest daughter to go visit Ave, you know, so that she could see the Catholic school. Mm-hmm. That she now goes to. And I've been coaching there. This is my second year. Mm-hmm. You know, and we've got the track team going. Mm-hmm. You know, which they hadn't had. It was just cross country only. So it helped restart the track and field program. And I get to coach at a place where there's you know, there's Catholic masses three times a day at the parish, four yeah. times a day on campus. Mm-hmm. Then there's also the Donahue Mass at the Donahue Academy, because my kids go there, I can go there, and just from a matter of convenience, it's much easier to kind of practice the Christian lifestyle, and it's yeah. in a more full way. Mm-hmm. It makes it really, really fun to try to execute the challenge of integrating sort of excellence in something that's temporal,
yeah,
you know, like sports, and living the Christian life.
Yes.
Because there has to be hope there, because mm-hmm. we're all down here on earth, sort of living these lives, and I know that there is hope, and that it is possible. I know yeah. with Christ it's possible to live out a vocation and have holiness. Mm-hmm. And so you know, that's what we're attempting to do
yeah.
at Ave. So
that's beautiful. We have about 10 minutes left. I want to circle back around a number of neat things from your story, Alan. And thank you so much for sharing it and walking us through the thought process and everything. You know, what you were just talking about there at the end, you know, now that as a coach and as a father, right, you know, talk a little bit about, you know, from your experience, you mentioned some of the pitfalls of something like sports, right, as a competitor with our faith. But obviously you're coaching it now, you know, and you have children, you have students. And so obviously there's a good element to it of integrating it with the faith. Talk a little bit about the potential pitfalls, but also the ways in which, again, pursuing that excellence is not just compatible, but something that can be helpful in our life of faith. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think that at the highest, yeah, the pitfalls would be that is... is what you're doing drawing you away from living the Christian life? Mm-hmm. Is it causing you to make morally poor choices? Mm-hmm. Is it preventing you from, for example, attending Mass? Are you not adhering to the Sunday obligation because of whatever, you know, what are you doing there? And you know, at the highest level, I think the easiest thing to pick on would be cheating. Mm-hmm. You know, like, if you know, the idol worship of sports is really what leads to people, you know, taking performance enhancing drugs. Mm-hmm. Or cheating in some other way, you know, some other, you know, differently creative way. Yeah. But that's the easy target.
Sure.
You know, just cheating, lying.
Okay.
Lying and cheating.
Yeah. Which tells you those kinds of things, like, again, those kinds of decisions, they give you a very quick clue to where this fits in the priority list of my life. I mean, you can say you're a Christian, but if you're a Christian who also does a sport, but if it's leading to you to make these kinds of decisions, you quickly realize where your sport fits in relationship to Christ, which one is on top, right?
Those Correct. Kinds of things. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. So there's other morally unacceptable, you know, by the Christian standard, mm-hmm. things that you could put in there, but that, you know, that's sort of in general, like, the pitfall of if you have that idol worship of sports, mm-hmm. it can put you in a position where you will be tempted and in many cases accepted to sin. Mm-hmm. And that's what you're trying to avoid, yeah. right? Not that we won't sin, but if you can avoid sin or mm-hmm. avoid, you know, or putting yourself in the near occasion of sin,
right.
which is something that's really important mm-hmm. too, then you know, that's really the sort of the challenge mm-hmm. of you know, trying to be excellent at it. Yeah. So, you know, do your best, try to do, you know, what you know, and learn to be best in terms of getting better at a sport, mm-hmm. Or, you know, your sport or really anything, you know, any vocation. But never let that take away from living the Christian lifestyle, mm-hmm. both in worship and then acting in a practical way outside of worship. Yeah. And so that's the challenge. That's mm-hmm. that's the challenge. And so there's a few practical things that mm-hmm. I, you know, like I took days off, but you know, I don't have my athletes practice on Sundays mm-hmm. unless we have to. You know, it's not, you know, the Catholic Church teaches that, you know, it's not a sin to do it on Sundays, but if I don't need to, I don't, you know, and it kind of makes sense, you know, and I think that during my time when I took the rest periods, I was actually rested and I ran better, more consistently when I took those times to rest.
Yeah,
I did. It actually makes sense.
Yeah.
It makes sense.
Yeah. When we observe the Sabbath, right, when we prioritize it, we go to Mass. We also figure out how to try to use that time well. There's always a sacrificial element involved, right? And of course, sports, you know, teach us that, you know, sacrifice is necessary to win the goal. The sacrifice of the Sabbath, you know, making intentional decisions about how to use that time, that really helps us, again, to clarify which one is on top. Am I the Lord of my life, or is Christ, right? Mm-hmm. And whenever we make a little sacrifice of that sort, it clarifies our priority list. You know, we get real clear on which one is on top. And so that's a great practice for people to start looking at that Sabbath. How can I prioritize it? And even, again, with my work or my sport, you know, making intentional decisions to put Christ first there, that's a big part of that journey of continuing to let it go from my head to my heart to really living out the faith.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
absolutely. Absolutely. And it helps you. It just helps you, like I said, number one, perform better, you know, if you're an athlete, in my professional opinion, from an athletic standpoint, mm-hmm. But then also perform better, in your daily life. Mm-hmm. You know, when you take that time, when you go to Mass at least once a week, mm-hmm. Then I've found that it makes you stronger. It does. It makes you able to make those decisions, great or small, whether it's the chains of mortal sin or the strings of venial sin. It makes those decisions become a little bit easier over time. Mm-hmm. You know, and again, I'm not going to admit that I'm a saint yet, mm-hmm. but and there were some sort of mortal sins, the chains that I had to kind of break, and it took a while. Mm-hmm. But it does get better, you know, and it does get better, and then it feels better too, and I've almost noticed from a physical standpoint, like if I can make it to Mass, mm-hmm. I feel calmer during the day. I feel like I'm a little more even keeled from the physical parts mm-hmm. of it. I even think it controls my hunger sometimes, you know. I'm like, I suddenly, you know, you don't have like the sugar cravings as much, you know. Yeah. It's like it kind of smooths you out a little bit.
Yeah.
And if you notice that and you become aware of that, mm-hmm. then it feels like to me it's just God's way of kind of whispering, like whispering there to me in the background, mm-hmm. just in this calm way of and calm encouragement, I would say.
Yeah.
So I'd say that those, those are some of the pitfalls, but then mm-hmm. I think that there's definitely high benefit from it. From the athletics perspective, number one, I think that it really teaches you to treat your body as the temple. Mm-hmm. You know, because our bodies are the temple of the Holy Spirit, and so what athletics does is that in a very refined way, it teaches you how your body functions and how it functions at the highest level. Because if you're off, you might not get the gold medal. You might get the silver medal. So it teaches you how to really care for your body very, very specifically. And so that's one thing it teaches you. And then it can help you transition some of the work ethic that you put into being athletically great to spiritually great, mm-hmm. you know. And if, so this joke about with my sort of my runner friends about how the rosary is like an easy run, like the recovery run. You don't yeah. have to think too hard about it. You can do it every day. Sometimes you're not motivated, and you start it, and you're kind of, you know, like say, oh, do I have time to do this, or do I really want to do this? But by the time you finish it, you feel a little better, and so sort of the workout part,
right?
You know, if you can pray the rosary every day. You can go to daily Mass, go to Mass on Sunday, and go to confession once a month. Mm-hmm. That's kind of your workout plan.
Yeah.
If you can do those things, then you're winning. I took that from Tom Monahan. That was the Monahan challenge.
Nice.
He told the graduates of Ave Maria that if you can do those things, then you're winning.
That's really good. Well, we're about at the end of time here, Alan, but thank you for sharing your testimony and your work. Again, people can find out more about the program there at Ave Maria if they go to AveMariaGyrenes.com. And so we'll have that up on the screen that people can check that out. Your work there, I know that you guys are getting ready to build a new track. And so we're praying for you and for your work with the students there. So,
well, thank you for having me. I really appreciate the time.
Thanks for being here. You know, and one thing that comes to mind here, again, with all that you've said, Alan, and what you were just talking about, too, is that, you know, so much of the journey in this life is about perseverance, right? Enduring to the end. And that's certainly something that we learn in sports, and any sort of physical discipline, intellectual discipline, the need to persevere. I mean, you can come up with a great workout plan or a great plan for the spiritual life, but you have to persevere in that. You can't just do it one day or 3 days. You persevere in it. And it's over the hump of perseverance that you begin to see the fruit. you begin to receive the peace. You begin to have what you believe in your mind really take root in your heart, in your habits. And so thank you for the good word today, encouraging us to persevere, Alan. And thank you for being here for this episode of the Journey Home program. I pray that Alan's story was an inspiration to you to keep running the race. Remember that you are on a journey, whether you are someone who's looking into the Catholic Church, asking questions, perhaps in RCIA, or if you're a lifelong Catholic, remember we're all on a journey and we have to persevere in faith, hope, and charity. So let's do it together. Let's pray for each other. And we'll be back again next week with another story. Until then, God bless.